Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
And we are here lucky to be talking to Mansoor Narula.
I just want to
put it out there that you've been listening to the show. It sounds, you were telling us you've been listening to some back episodes.
Yeah, I went back.
So is it kind of silly now?
It's kind of silly
in person.
Being here, I thought it would be a real studio.
Who do you think we are?
This is not NPR. I thought there would be like a booth and a glass.
You want to describe the room we're in? Yeah. We're in like a closet,
a large storage space, like on air light, you know. And then I would know, and then I would have like some kind of production assistant prepping me in the back before I came on.
Oh, it's literally, I am.
That's where Kate would have come in. She would have been prepping me in the side. That's what I like powdering my face.
And that's what
water.
I was doing secretly while we were chatting before the show. I was preparing you.
Okay.
Okay. I just wanted to jump right into something.
Sure.
So you have a degree in counseling.
Yes.
And a lot of what we've been working on in this last few episodes where we've been looking at abstraction and talking about abstraction,
yes.
I've been trying to have an emotional response to the work. And it, like, I think I'm having some kind of blockage, some emotional blockage. And I just wondered if you had any advice for that.
It's funny. I do a thing where I don't answer people's questions directly, so they have to.
Perfect.
Okay.
We'll learn.
Okay. It'll come back. We'll come back to that at some point. I would say, for my work, I think sometimes it's a feelings chart, because I was thinking about. I saw a quote that Abby Banks, who has work out there, she had a quote about Henry Moore talking about abstraction isn't about like replicating reality, and it's more about like. Maybe not conveying or displaying emotion. And so I feel like sometimes the work I'm is about processing emotion, you know? So it's not about like, sometimes it's about like formal issues or, but it's not, it's, it is what I feel. And sometimes people respond to it, sometimes they don't. So I don't know if that's helpful. I think sometimes it's like to look at abstraction, because I was thinking about like, what are the kinds of abstractions I don't respond to, like Bick Rothko's and other artists who I don't know their names and at the MoMA, and like I'm just like, cool, a big color field, you know, but I'm also in the moment when I'm at the museum, I don't want to see that, you know, so I'm like closed off to it. So I would say sometimes to look at abstraction, it's like, for me, I have to think about like, what state of mind am I open to this? Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm open to it, then I can receive, I can pay attention to details, I can observe the piece from afar, and I'm invited to come up close. So I think a lot of times it's about me or you.
Is there a work that you do respond like quite emotionally to?
Visual? Yeah. I think I was telling someone that I'm like the worst art person, because I go see a lot of art, but I don't remember. I intentionally don't remember names of artists.
Yeah. You intentionally don't remember?
Yeah, unless I really like them, because I think I was talking to Trina Robinson yesterday and Malcolm, and I was telling them that like I don't look at other textile work, like I'm intentional, because I don't want to creep in there. I don't want it to creep inside of me, because I know even the effects early on when I was first started making this kind of work, I was really inspired by like Gies Bend and Ellen Natsui, and I would feel like that's creeped in there. And so for me, I'm like, I want to be aware of what's happening, but I also want to like be original, which is some kind of like hip hop ethos about like trying to do original stuff. And it's about me. It's not to be egocentric, but it's like I remember there's a quote, did you ever see Star Wars?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, the kid when he's in the kitchen with his mom, I can't remember his name. Everyone's going to kill me.
Is it Anakin Skywalker?
No, the before. He's like arguing with his mom. He's like, it's not for you. His mom's like, why do you do this stuff? Why are you going? He's like, I'm the king of all yards. I want to be all city. It's not for you. It's for me. It's for, you're irrelevant. It's not, you're irrelevant. You know what I mean? He's like, the people that want to see it will see it. Everyone else can whatever, you know?
Sure enough.
Yeah. So that didn't answer your question. But
it's very roundabout.
Yeah.
But I guess I feel like I want to challenge you and say that, like, because I've thought about these things, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, everything is seeping in all the time.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
are, we are all a product of what we've experienced and what we've seen. You know what I mean? Like, it's always there influencing us somehow.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not, like, at the forefront, you know?
Yeah, I was being I was being somewhat disingenuous. Well, even though I answered it serious, but I think the things that creep in, like, to be like really honest. The things that have creeped in for me lately aren't like visual pieces of art, but have been like literature. So like when I was listening a couple of weeks ago, I've been procrastinating and not listening to like Viet Thanh Nguyen's book, The Sympathizer. I can't believe I didn't listen to it 10 years ago. It was incredible. It was like one of the things, like I listened to it twice, the audiobook twice, like just because I loved it so much. Mainly because I realized at the end of the book, he has a couple of essays and interviews where he's talking about his influences and what kind of informed his work. And it's kind of a thing that I've been obsessed about for a long time, which is Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. You know, and that's something that really stuck to me because it was the issues of, I mean, I like this device that both people use in their books is like someone has temporary amnesia and then they're trying to figure out where they are and how they got there. And I really like that. And another piece is about like bullying and being bonded to people that are also people that stand up instead of being bystanders. You know, mainly in the Sympathizer. And just, sorry, I'm deviating again, but another piece about the Ralph Ellison book that really stuck with me too was just a person going through life or trying to ask people questions that only they know the answer to. And those are things that really resonate with me. So those are like, that's literature that hit me. But visually, I'm ashamed, not ashamed to say this, but one thing that really impacted me was like a year ago that I saw visual. It was a video piece. It was by Richard Massey. Maybe this needs to be blocked out. It was about where he was doing the, he had two pieces. One was at the MoMA like 4 or 5 years ago. It was like these surveillance videos that he shot of people. And they were like being detained because they were migrants. And it was like shot with these. And so it was like the technological sublime. And then he had another piece about the Amazon and deforestation. But it's just, I mean, it kind of affected me because it was like so much technology, like whether it was like the infrared cameras, the way it was shot, a lot of process stuff. Like work like mine, it was even like going to the Filipino Cultural Center, Central Filipino. Like I was at a piece on a show there 3 weeks ago. And the way to go back to the group show, we had to walk by this this collection of textiles that were curated from Mindanao. And I always thought of Mindanao as being like predominantly Muslim, but I learned through the exhibition that it was like Christian, but the textiles that were attracted to were like these Christian textiles that were like incredible, incredible, but not really Christian, but it was still like mainly like indigenous practices, like using embroidery, using buttons, using all these kind of adornments. And those were things I was like, oh shit, I want to learn about more of this, you know? So like, I didn't see it in a museum because sometimes I think about like art has to be in a museum, but it was in the cultural center and I was like curious. I mean, that's what I think art should be, is like, I want to have us ask questions. Like, mm-hmm. How do they do this? Where does it come from? What are the traditions? Like who is the person that made it? What is the purpose of it? Okay.
Can I ask a question about like your sort of approach with youth? Like you often bring the students that you work with to art spaces or, you know, maybe like you've brought them, I know, to the Arts Commission Gallery previously. What is your approach with them as far as like looking at work? Is it just, do you have an approach or you must have something that...
A lot of times, I was doing more work with students with like sound a couple of years ago, less visual. There were only a couple of students that I did visual work with. But a lot of it's like, I'll use it to kind of, lately I've been using it to kind of build rapport and connection. Mm-hmm. So like, I think of the most recent student that he was assigned to me like in April or May. And one of the first exercises we did, because he was not nonverbal, he was like, English is like his third language. He spoke a Central American language and learned Spanish only when he came here.
Wow. Okay.
But his Spanish was better than his English was better than Spanish. So one of the things we were communicating, I knew he understood Spanish, English, but like, I just invited him to do like a collaborative drawing because he told me that he like saw a certain movie and then I was like, oh, do you want to draw? And then we drew and talked about it and talked about what it meant. So like 4 or 5 years ago, I forgot who was running the SF MoMA teacher institutes. There were like these teacher training institutes.
Probably Mary and Julie.
And she went to Facebook. Was it the person that went to Facebook? No. That was the first person that went to Facebook.
Jessalyn.
Oh, okay. Jessalyn. Okay. I was like, yeah, yeah. So
shout out Jesselyn.
Yeah. So she led these train, and one of the Saturday workshops or institutes was on critical lenses, and that's I find is really like thinking about like a framework for looking at work, not just like I like this piece, but going back to your question, it's like viewer response, not just looking at it through a formal lens, but like how I'm responding to this. Like, does this remind me of something? Does this, what do I see in this work? So that's more of it. And also naming things like if you're looking at it, like this is a composition, this is color, this is, so that's, those are the things I think about. Still not answering your question.
But go ahead. I think it's easier. It's an easier approach, like just to name what you're seeing.
Yeah.
So that you don't feel like you have to be like, this is what this means.
Yeah.
You know, like, which I think we're all like in the art field feel like we're constantly put in a position where we have to be an expert or like know what we're saying or be the definitive in some ways. At least I feel that way in my role. Often it's nice to just be like, no, I can just say what I'm seeing. Like, that's also legitimate and important, you know,
and it has value. But yeah. Also, I think a lot of us, I'm going to include myself in this, don't have the vocabulary to describe what we're seeing. Right. It's kind of like this. I was thinking like Winston Smith in 1984, like he has a friend that they're like trying to shrink language. Mm-hmm. And I feel as like we, especially like using computers and looking at the internet, like our language and our capacity is shrinking, you know? And so I think a lot of it is like teaching people and teaching myself and along the process of like how to name things, like how is this organized? Like, what does it mean? What is the historical perspective or what is this informed by? Mm-hmm. Even though I told you I don't look at art most of the time, but just in terms of with children and even myself, just still continuing to ask questions. Like, what do I see? What do I feel? Does this remind me of something else? Okay, another question. I like to start with questions. When I was working at Juvenile Hall, I had this like system that I really loved when I would do intakes with students. And the question was like, who are you? Who are you? And then I'd be like, oh, I'm whatever. And I would give an example of myself. Like, and then, where are you? I'm not going to say the third question. It's a little provocative. But I would say the third one is, who are you? Where are you? Who are you with? Right? So who are you surrounding yourself? Who comes to see you? Who checks on you? What is your purpose? Where are
That's
you going?
Hard.
Yeah, no.
That's
no.
hard for adults.
I mean, it's hard for adults, adult, but yeah. Like, but it can even be like scaled down to like, right now, what is my purpose? For me, if I answer, I'm like answering my own questions, like, what am I purpose here? My purpose is to be open, you know?
In this moment.
Thank is like you. To be open so that, like, even though I know I'm a circular talker and thinker, like, I can, if I'm truly in this moment, I trust that I'll come back to your question. Even like, I did. It took me a long time, but I came back to it. So just like having, it sounds cliche, like having faith in the process and understanding like, inside of me, like I know where I'm going. It'll take me a little while to get there, but I'll get there. Yeah. So.
It's talking about process and when you're making your work.
Yeah.
How are you cultivating kind of, do you have like a meditative practice or something to like get in touch with your intuition? Stuff like that.
Were you listening to the same podcast? I think we're listening to the same podcast. Because I was listening to Mohsen Hamid. I think he's Pakistani British writer. He had a series of essays. I can't remember the name of them. Really bad with names. But anyway, he was talking about listening to Murakami, who I like. Whenever I hear people talk about Murakami, I like roll my eyes. But he did talk about this process of
Which Murakami?
I think all of them.
The artist?
No, yeah, the writer. Yeah. Sorry, the writer. I meant the writer. Yeah, because I would like roll my eyes. I'm like, I read all those books when I was like in my 20s. Like all of them. I can't differentiate one from the other. They're great. Like, but he talked about this process of mesmerism. And he was talking about like how Murakami says that he like runs 5 miles or runs marathons, does some kind of swimming, and then he's like preparing himself to work. And then Mohsen Hamid was saying that he does a similar thing, but he only walks like 5 miles in the morning, you know, and texts and stuff. And I was thinking like when I'm in the studio, I was like, mine is like I'm it's self mesmerism. I'm not gonna engage in any kind of rigorous activity, but it's like. I feel like I'm already in that state, like being present with my job, because I feel like in my job, like even with you all here, like I'm at work, not work right now, but I'm like being with people, like being when I'm with you, I'm completely with you. Like I'm not daydreaming about like what I'm going to have after this or what I'm going to do. So it's like when I'm in my studio trying to work, it's like forcing myself to be with myself, which is really hard. So sometimes introduce distractions so that I can be with myself. That kind of,
like, what kind of distractions?
One of the things I used to do, one of the things I used to do in my old studio that would annoy my studio mates was I would listen to a podcast and listen to music in the background. Yeah, just because it was like, oh man, you got too many things going up in your head. You need to, like, so instead of meditating, that's what I do. And then the other day, I was listening to instrumental music while listening to MFT. Licensing exam course while
that
I was making work.
Marriage and family therapy.
Yeah. So I was doing that all at the same time and making work. Yeah, but it was like, it was kind of just distracting. Yeah, it was distracting my mind just so I could be like with, in the moment and with myself.
Were you actually taking like a course?
Yeah, I'm taking a course.
But so you can absorb that information while you're doing other things?
I just trust the process. Sorry. No, I'm going to study for real up until December. I was just kind of sometimes. I'm just free. It's just like, because I feel like, I don't know, like I'm very cautious. I'm very cautious a lot of times. Hmm. Even though I'm like, do things that are erratic and irrational sometimes, but like, with some things that are like scare me, like I have to approach them really slowly. And I feel like my work sometimes is like that, like there are pieces that are like, oh my God, I've been working this for like a year. You know what I mean? So it's like, sometimes it's like so slow and so like cautious and so like, it's kind of like a relationship. I caught myself like referring to a piece by a gender yesterday, like he, you know, like, cause it's like a person, like, I don't even know if I want to be in the relationship with anymore, dude. You know, you're like, you know, even though you're part of it, you're like, I don't know, man. You know, like, we've been at this and we're not making any progress. Like, yeah, I don't know. Again, I didn't answer your question, but that's who I am. I do me.
I feel like the most legit artists I know treat their work like people.
Oh, okay.
Like the idea of like having pronouns for your work and like stuff like that as an artist, because I'm just like, treat my work like a problem kind of, and it's like, okay, how are we solving all this stuff that needs to be sorted out?
That's still happening there. Like, it's like, I think some of the formal issues and like with composition and color, those are sometimes not really problems, but like, I just think of it like, the framework of problems, I don't know, it doesn't work for me, but for me, the framework that works is like, how resolution, like, how is this, what's the solution to this, not problem, but the solution to this blank space, like, where is this going to go? How am I going to solve it? How am I going to resolve it? In the way that feels congruent, that's not informed by like my impatience or anxiety or whatever, you know, so.
How are you getting the anxiety out of there?
It's in there. I feel like that's, so there are a lot of references. I don't have my list of quotes, but I just think about like, there's so many anxieties, like where I live, work, life, that those are just in the work. Cause they're in me, they're in the work, you know? And I think that can be expressed like, oh my God, like, why do I take so long to make work? Like, it's like, cause it's like, why do I work so small? Like, that's all driven by anxiety, and it's driven by like control. Maybe cause I like prolonging things that can be resolved really quickly. Cause it's a way of being. It's like a way of, I don't know, it's like a way of like letting time kind of dictate. And like, I feel like when you're with things for a long time, you feel like if they're worthwhile or not. Like a person, like the great hangout I have with someone the first time I meet them, I feel like isn't the best hangout. It's probably the hangout that I have with the person that I thought I knew, you know what I mean? That I thought I knew, and we just have this, it just took time to kind of unravel. So that's kind of an answer to your anxiety related question. Yeah, it's all in there. And I feel like it's, I was thinking of this Frederick Douglass quote where he talked about like, he's responding to these questions about, aren't slaves happy because they're always singing, you know what I mean? And he's like, no, it's like, this is the way like you deal with where you're at, right? And so a lot of my work is like about where I'm at in these moments. And it's so much going through my head. In some ways, it should happen faster because sometimes I lose track of where I started. Even though it's like variations on a theme, but these are like time capsules. These are like moments in my life, you know? And it's expressed through this particular medium of sewing.
Is it ever hard for you to like part with a piece? Like if it sells or whatever?
Oh yeah. Like I'm like Mr. Notorious of like, it's not for sale.
Not for sale.
Actually, I want it back. Actually, there's some pieces I'm kind of, I don't know. Like, there are people that have pieces that I don't want them to have them. And I'm not there yet where I would be like, hey, can I just buy this back from you? Yeah, because I'm not. It's just like, it's part of, it's my fucking, excuse my life. It's like my life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not painting pictures to match people's fucking couches. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, this is my lived experience. You know, I mean, it's important to me, but like, it's not decorative. You know, it's not fun. I mean, it looks fun, but it's not fun. It's like hard a lot of times. It's joyful, but it's like, it's my life, you know? So yeah, because it's so much care. I mean, sometimes it doesn't look like it, but that's intentional, but it's like care and thought and like energy and time. These are things that have value to me. Like it's hard to put a like a monetary value on it, you know?
Totally. So one of the topics that keeps coming up is like, what is painting and like what work is a painting, and if is it a textile, is it a painting, is it a sculpture, all these different things. And I think last episode we decided that was a stupid conversation.
No, I like it. Yeah.
but I kind of realized when I was looking at your work that like how you define what like medium or what like you're kind of defining what tradition that your work is going to be, like the lens that's going to be seen through. And so like, do you see your work in like a painting tradition, or like there's also quilting traditions and like all these different kind of schools of thought or like ways of making and all the history that comes with them? Like, do you kind of just like see yourself in all these different conversations, or do you kind of gravitate towards one more than the other?
Okay, that's a good question.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm just thinking about, do I answer it like the Icarus grandiose person, or like do I answer it as my authentic self? Like,
let's go both.
Okay, both. Okay, okay. Can I do the first, the hubris guy first? Okay. I'm beyond category, you know what I'm saying? I do what I want, you know what I mean? You can't put me in a box. You can't put me in a box. No, I'm me. I'm special. Okay, that was I just had to get that out of the way. Okay, but like you were saying earlier, so many things get in there, right? Like, even though I think I have control, it's all in there. I'm looking at my phone, I'm like walking down the street, I'm smelling things, right? I'm stepping in poop on the street, you know, like all these things are happening. So I think I was thinking about this earlier too, where I like to think of myself as someone who like paints with colored fabric, right? But just assembled it. But I don't like that. I like the idea of like fetishizing like certain mediums. And I deeply respect like specific quilting traditions, like the Geese Band and like the Sidhi people in southern India, and other kinds of textile work. I have not learned from those people or any of the people. It was seeing shows, pictures, and books, and but no one taught me. But my move towards quilting was, or using quilting techniques, was more of like necessity, because I was trying to figure out ways to, how do I give these, I wanted to give, to build these kind of like structures, internal structures, I can't remember the name of it, for like, for my pieces. And quilting made the most sense because that was material that I already had. And so I used the backing of it as like rubber coated nylon. And then when it's sandwiched, it's really rigid. And so that's why I started stitching on top. I initially was just piecing fabric together using zigzag stitches and then overlapping stitches. And then I realized through quilting, which draws upon a couple of things, like when I first got a sewing machine, probably in 2003, one of the first things I did with the sewing machine was draw with it. So I used to have these sweatshirts that I had where I just draw bicycles, repetitive bicycles. Right. I have some of these backpacks, a backpack that I made for a friend that was like covered in like this repetitive drawing. And I just loved, and I actually sewed through my finger once because I loved drawing so much with my sewing machine, like high speed, like, you know? And so, but with the use of color, because I was thinking about color, and like I've gone through these periods of like being afraid of color. Like when I first started working, I worked monochromatically, like mainly with blue and green and red, because I was like afraid of color and like didn't feel like I understood color. And I'm going to go back again. I'm not a linear talker or thinker. And I was thinking about like some things that happened when I was in college was when two things that happened. Number one, when I was a freshman and I tried to get in a drawing class, but I couldn't get in a drawing class. And the only class was open was photography one. And I ended up taking photography, but that helped me later on because it made me think more about composition in a way that I didn't really think about it when I was just drawing. And then another thing that happened was taking like painting classes with Michael Cook at UNM and being around other painters and thinking deliberately about color and how to make color. And then hopping back in time again to like when I was a kid in Chicago, my father was a painter and a textile artist. And one of the things, because we lived in like, I would say my parents were both graduated from college. My dad he graduated from Art Institute of Chicago and then had a master's from the University of Chicago. My mom went to Carleton College, but they didn't want to live with middle-class black people. So we lived in often poor black neighborhoods. But one of the things that I had to navigate was like keeping myself safe and protecting myself, right? Because I was catching the bus by myself when I was 7 years old in Chicago, across town, so taking for an hour. But one of the things, I'm getting to the point, don't worry. One of the things my dad taught me was riding the bus. I remember he was like, when you're walking through certain neighborhoods, you see people or dogs, think of color. He was like, think of blue and green for peace and calm and internalize your thought about that color. And so believing in the power of color, I'd kind of forgotten that. I think sometimes like when we think about formal education, for me, it just took me, like I learned these things that I'm sure benefit me now, but I felt like the work I created when I was at school for a long time after school, I kind of lost a lot of like my creativity, you know? And so it took me a long time to regain it, you know, but it was being away from school and not paying attention to art. Like maybe teaching art is like this thing I would binge on, like I would pay $20 and go to the museum and like be in there for 10 hours and then make myself sick. And then I wouldn't go for a long time. You know, like on a bender, you're like, this is all I can afford. I'm not going to be able to do this again. And that's it, you know? So like color, that was how I thought of color, was like in terms of feeling and emotion. So again, I'm trying to answer the question you asked in the beginning. It was like, because I'm using like creating this emotional work, like what are the colors that represent, and what are some of the textures, what are some of the patterns that represent some of the emotions that I'm feeling and processing right now.
Sorry, I'm like sort of fascinated by your dad's sort of advice, or I guess advice to you as you're walking through a city. And I'm just trying to think about, like, you had said previously that you were afraid of color.
Yeah.
Like, in work, yeah. In your work. And then thinking about that, like, it's almost, did you think of colors for other experiences other than, because it sounds like if you were walking to the bus stop and you saw a dog or people, that might have been, like, a fear response.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering if it was always just related to fear in that moment. And
no.
That's maybe, it was
joy,
other colors.
It was everything. Yeah, and even a pattern, and even certain types of textiles. So like these associations, and it makes sense because like so much of my like adolescent life, I had some pretty difficult experiences like during my teenage years. But I think so much of like my teenage years was like rejecting like things that my parents gave me, you know? So it was like rejection. And I don't know why, like even when I went to college, I was like, I'm never gonna be an artist, F that, you know? Like, you can kiss, I'll be dead before I'm an artist, you know? I don't know, that's why I learned, don't ever say, I did this before when I left Albuquerque, I was like, literally, you guys will never see me again. I'm out of here, you know? And then like a year later, I'm back, you know? So don't, try to keep it even, Steven, for the most part.
Smart.
Yeah.
Did you end up in the Southwest for school, or were you already?
Oh, there? No. The story was, so I had a godmother that lived. I should have brought my Google Maps. That would be a prop. I was going to be a prop. My godmother lived a few blocks away from us in Chicago near 73rd and 72nd and Harvard. And she lived across Vincennes. And she was really close. She was a friend of my dad's and then my mom. And they lived on Perry Street. And they were part of this community my parents are part of. And then my godmother got a job at Sandia Labs in Albuquerque when I was probably like 7 or 6. And then I remember going to visit. She invited me to go visit. That was the first time I was ever on a plane. I was 7 or 8 years old, I think. And it was on Braniff Airlines. And I went, and it was just like, I went to Albuquerque. And it was like, for a little kid, you're like, who grew up in the city, it was like, oh, mountains. oh, the desert, oh. And I would go like every summer, that was like the highlight of my year, was like going to Albuquerque and flying model rockets, like meeting all these new friends who were, because I grew up in the segregated Chicago, so like most of my friends were Black. And then going there and meeting people who were like Native American and white kids and like riding bikes and like, yeah, just like, it was just, for me, it just represented like freedom when I felt like kind of caged in and like restricted in a lot of ways. And so when I was 15 years old, there was a summer I went there and I was like, I didn't want to go back to Chicago. I was like after my sophomore year, I was like, I don't want to go back to Chicago. I was like, I really don't want to go back to Chicago. You know, I was like, this is too good. It's too good. It's way better for me. I do not want to go back. And so I was like begging and pleading, and the answer was no. And I was trying to negotiate like two divorced parents too, like as a teenager. And the push and pull of that. And then what I did my junior year was, I don't know, I was like an underachiever, like in school. Like I was one of those people, like I think, that was impacted by my parents' divorce. Like I was a student who like skipped grades. And then like when my parents divorced, I was like an F student, you know. So my junior year, I think I got like a 3.87 GPA and was like, just because I wanted to like have some, that's what I tell kids now, is like evidence, like that I can do well in a different environment. And so I did well, was motivated, did all these pre-ACT, SAT classes, tests, all this stuff. And then my godmother let me move with her when I was a senior in high school. So I spent my senior year in high school at Albuquerque High School. Wow. Yeah. And then it was like expensive for me. So it was like, I was into skateboarding when I was in Chicago. So I was like skateboarding, running cross country, did all these clubs. It was like I took advantage of every opportunity that I was able to see and at Albuquerque High School. Yeah.
And then you went to the University of New Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah. I did what they, not an intentional gap year, but I didn't have residency. So I like worked at Target and Baskin Robbins for a year. And then I went to school.
What was your favorite flavor?
That's what I was gonna ask.
Oh my God. That's okay. 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 That's easy. Baseball nut. Don't quote me. It has vanilla. It had vanilla with, I think it had blueberry sorbet, like sorbet, and the swirl of it in there. Then it had like chunks of chocolate, and I think it had cashews.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a potent mix.
Yeah, and I was a bad employee. So whenever people get hand-packed pints, it's like, because they were so expensive, you know what I mean?
So you like, really packed it in.
I packed it in there. It was probably like two pints. I wanted a little bit like bulging on the sides. And I used to get reprimanded by the manager.
That's too much.
Yeah. I was like, and then I, of course, we were supposed to only take, I think we'd take ice cream home, and I took ice cream home every day.
That's a lot of ice cream.
Hey. I can have a good sugar ice cream.
Munster and I have an ice cream relationship.
I know. She ruined me. She ruined me for ice cream.
I didn't realize it started so far back, though.
Yeah.
For you.
I mean, I think it was something I often didn't, because I was been poor most of my adult life, and so I never bought it. It was like an indulgence. It was like, yeah. Oh, I can't spend.
It was always like a cone, maybe, and like one scoop.
Oh, I'm a cheaper than that. Because I was like, a cone is like, that was like the cost of a pint.
What the hell?
Yeah, like if you bought a cone, it was like $3.50 or whatever, and that was a whole pint of Ben & Jerry's, which could last me still one serving.
A lot more ice cream.
Yeah, yeah, but Maysoon, Stacy was house sitting at Maysoon's house, and she had Strauss chocolate in the freezer. I mean, I always saw Strauss, and I was like, "That's a rich person ice cream," because it was like $10 for a quart, right?
It was not.
Now
it
it's 15, like, by the way.
No, oh, yeah, for a quart, we always got the pint size. Oh. That's about 6 or 7.
Oh,
is that the ice cream that comes in a glass jar?
No.
Their milk does.
I don't know this one.
Yeah,
Strauss. You don't know Strauss?
No.
Yeah,
it's just in a little carton.
Yeah, it's in a little carton. It's.
We don't eat the whole thing at once.
Oh, I do.
So for us, it's like, I know, rich person's ice cream, but like we can make it last like the week.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So it's like getting our bang for the buck. What is it called? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels like a little bit of bragging.
More bang for your buck.
I'm just saying. I'm just trying to be like, we're not throwing all our money at ice cream.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do. I have to do it. So I do a thing like now. Oh my God, because I put on weight, right, from ice cream. And I now every quart of Strauss that I eat for the year, I put it on the wall. I put the lid on the wall. Yeah, I have it, so I know exactly. No. Yeah, I know exactly. I was looking at it this morning.
How many are up there?
Right now there's 7, which is good.
Yeah. What do you feel when you look at that?
Oh, man. I mean, now it's more neutral. Before it was like some shaming. I think of it like for myself, it's like, hey, man, you need to keep yourself in check, you know? Because before I'd be like, oh, I'm having feelings. I love Strauss coffee. That's like my, and strawberry too.
The strawberry is so good.
So good.
Real strawberry flavor.
I've got to try that.
Yeah. And you know, okay, back to the Baskin Robbins days, one of the things I thought when I worked at Baskin Robbins that I would want like a banana split, but I realized what I like more is a banana royale. Yeah.
Wait, what's that?
It's when you chop the banana. So now whenever I ice cream, I always make a bed of banana, like chopped banana.
On the bottom,
and then put scoops of ice cream on top.
And what else?
And then sometimes if I have cashews, I like cashews on it.
Is there not like a sauce or something? Like in a typical banana royale?
They'll put hot fudge. Okay. Yeah, but for me, you know, I can't have that stuff around.
Real quick anecdote for Kate Rhodes. When I was a kid, my dad, okay, this is kind of dark in a way, but when I was a kid, my dad would like basically make me go work out because I was like a chubby kid. And so he taught at a college. And so the gym at the college, he would like force me to go like run around the track and stuff like that. And sometimes my mom would come with. And when she would come with, she would take me for ice cream after.
Oh!
So basically canceled it out.
I know!
Canceled it out.
Your
but what we would
like,
get,
oh,
I
so
know.
Cute.
What we would get always was a banana royale.
Oh,
with
yeah.
For me, it was with Rocky Road.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's your favorite flavor ice cream?
I don't necessarily have a favorite. I do like a Mexican chocolate a lot.
Oh yeah.
And sure. I grew up loving butter pecan. I think that's I feel like it's a Midwestern thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't really see it out here. And I always have loved a butterscotch situation.
Mm. Sophisticated.
No.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get off the top. I do love ice cream, by the way.
We really went on an ice cream tangent,
yeah.
And I love that. I want to rewind a little bit because you mentioned Stacy.
Oh, yes.
That's your partner.
Yes.
I wanted to give a shout out to Stacy.
Stacy, who was listening to the podcast before my story.
That's true. It's true. I think.
Why were you so resistant to listening?
I told you. It was one of those things I think where sometimes you really respect people. You know, you really like someone. You're like, oh, Kate Rhodes. I've never seen Kate Rhodes' work. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I don't know. Will I like Kate? I like Kate Rhodes and respect Kate Rhodes. Will I like Kate Rhodes' art?
You don't want it to affect the relationship if everything's really bad.
Yeah. Or, but I think the same is for me. Like, I think when, let's say, when I had a really messy house, right? People don't need to see that. No one needs to see, you don't need to see that.
Sure.
No one needs to see that, right?
It's amazing that you're aware of it, because I feel like some people are not even aware of that.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware of it. It's like the yogurt lids. I know.
Okay, I'm taking a real left turn here, but you did mention colors, color meanings. Mm-hmm. And so you were talking about like blue and green being like calming colors. I'm wondering if every color has some meaning to you. I saw you speak. I was watching another interview with you.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a piece you had that was kind of like fluorescent orange. And it brought up like these things about like incarceration because of orange jumpsuits,
yeah.
But then also like caution and safety and all these things. So I was just wondering if like every color brings these connotations.
Like I don't think I have like a palette and like I said, my emotions chart, I don't have like colors assigned to them, but I was thinking about like one of the pieces I had in the hospital show that was made probably in like 2024. Like it was kind of about what was happening where I live with the Airbnb and the kind of bullying that was happening for me for speaking up or being non-compliant. And so in the piece, it has these kind of forms. I was looking at it again because what piece do I not talk about that's still like emotional and relevant? And I was like, the browns, there's some browns on the piece and some reds that when I look at it now, I was like, oh yeah, that's me feeling like I'm on an island or feeling like I'm the odd person out for, I think, having ethics and not going along with the program, you know? And so the pattern and the colors, like the way they're interacting with the isolation of forms also have meaning. So I think it's like all these things. I think depending on, I assign it meaning. Some things have pre-existing meaning, and then some things are assigned meaning based on experiences I'm having, you know? Maybe it's I found a piece, maybe I found this moving blanket, right? And like working with it and touching it can have a meaning, and I assign it meaning, and while I'm making the piece, now this means Kate Rhodes has beautiful eyes and a smooth laugh. It makes me think of the principle of Kuchichakali. I'm going a little bit off rails where it's like, when I think about my work, I was thinking about this last week, it's about one of the moves towards abstraction for me was that there were two things, but was I really liked some of the paintings I did when I was in college. Like I was like, oh, I wish I still had that painting. One was when I went to Ghana with my dad when I was 21. I met a young man named Sappho, who's incredible. I feel like every time I go places, sometimes I meet people who are just like, how can anyone do anything harmful to another human being ever? Mm. You know what I mean? When you meet people who are just like so beautiful, so hospitable, so giving, and have don't want my money, don't want anything for me, mm-hmm. but just want to be with another person. And so I have a painting that I made with him, and just the use of color, like he had blue-black skin, so just accentuating that in this oil painting, I was using like impasto, and I was like, oh, that was a good painting, you know? But it was like for me, the challenge I had with painting, I really liked painting portraits. I did like some portraits of myself. One of the paintings I wish I had was a portrait of myself that I made, like the big painting, you know? But one of the things I like was like use of color to convey emotion. Like I'm looking at it now, but also one of the things I realized I didn't like was just, it had to look like something, right? And then because it had to look like something, that was for other people. Like I knew what Sappho looked like. I knew what he felt like inside of me, but the painting from the photograph, I felt I'm tied to this photograph. Like there are so many other things that have happened, and not just this moment I captured with the photograph, but so many things happened in that relationship, in that time. So many things have happened in the 6 months since that photograph was taken. And how do I convey those things? You know, like I said, anything, the thoughts, the emotions, the phone calls, you know? And then the perfectionism, like it has to be perfect. It has to look like this. I mean, to me, in my mind then, it was like, it has to look like this or it has to resemble this, you know? And part of it was breaking free with like, a lot of stuff does come back. So when I think the paintings that I realized I really enjoyed doing were ones that were, at the time was like German expressionist painting, right? That I really enjoyed, like Emil Nold. And some other people I can't remember, but then I looked at it, I was like, well, wait a second, this reminds me of the exhibit my dad took me to when I was like 10 years old in Detroit. There was an exhibition, we drove my dad, myself, and my sister, we drove to Detroit, and he took us to see this exhibition. It was like Picasso sculptures paired with the African works of art that they were basically derivative of. And so by doing, like, when I went back to these paintings, when I was thinking about that, when I was doing the painting, after I did the painting, I was like, wait a second, this is referencing something that was referencing something else. And it was like, what I want is the emotion. I wanted the expression. I wasn't attached to, like, the representation of me or the physical representation or likeness. It was like, how do I capture what I was feeling? And I felt like through that painting, when I think about the red background, the anxiety, the anxious, even the way I rendered my features is like, moving, and also I really enjoyed like the futurists who are also like cubists, who are also fascists, but about movement and motion, like trying to cap motion in painting. And then that was kind of like the part where I was like, I don't really want to paint figuratively anymore. And then when I finished school without a place to make paint, I was making these kind of abstractions on little pieces of paper and taking a lot of Polaroids because I was still that drawn to memory. Like, I feel like Memento came around at the same time where I was like, yeah, like, oh my God, I'm going to forget, like forgetting again, like I forget everything, right? Or at least I think I can't recall things, but just I have to remember. Like, so every person I had a relationship with, it would be like, okay, I have a memento of that. And then I would write immediately in the back, Kate Rhodes, we talked about this, this, and this, met on this corner, da, da, da. Put it in the, so I have a box full of Polaroids.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, because it was like, I don't know. You know, that was my practice. It was like, so my practice, because I didn't have space, was then to making small, because I only had a desk to work on, but I had a Polaroid camera. When I lived in Tucson briefly, I could find Polaroids everywhere because there were lots of retirees who were dying. Mm-hmm. And then I found some photo stores that had expired Polaroid camera film that they were selling for $1 a packet. So I would just buy expired. I was just taking Polaroids like crazy. So anyway, that was kind of the departures, you know. But I feel like the reason I'm bringing that up is because I feel like I had someone recently say that they were upset with themselves because they weren't making art. And I just reminded them, like, art isn't just painting or whatever medium you choose to do. It's like, art is being with people. Art is seeing. Art is thinking. Art is, like, feeling. Art is, like, it's not compartmentalized. It's not this thing that's separated from ourselves. It's in us. And, like, I feel like I'm being creative even when we're being interviewed. So it's, like, when I think about, like, looking at abstraction, and I think about looking at art, and I think about, like, being with people, I think, for me, being with myself and being with other people is the real work. It doesn't matter how I choose to do it. It could be with film. It could be with freaking needlepoint. It could be with me moving objects around the ground. It's just, like, me being on Earth, being with other human beings. Remember to be kind, compassionate, and firm. Yeah, sorry.
I love that's
our last question on that.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That was perfect. So that's a perfect spot to end on. But we do have one more question that we always ask our interviewees at the end of an interview, and that is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
I think I talked about, everyone knows about what's happening where I live. And I guess the thing I want people to know is, like, just because people tell you things are a certain way doesn't mean that they are that certain way. If you have questions, if you think, like, people having two apartments and a place and Airbnb being one of them is wrong, ask your friends. Ask why they're silent. Ask why, for me, why am I, like, the odd person out for saying what everyone knows to be true? Like, that's what I think people know. Like, I'm going to say, fuck it, I'll say it. What's going on at Project Arto is fucked up. Mm. Like, everyone who, like, sits on the board and just nods their head, like, they're fucking people that need places to stay. I'm tired of fucking hearing that Whitney Houston song about people don't have places to stay. We have people living in that fucking building who don't make art anymore, who live in other places, who own homes, who own multiple homes, and who are hoarding power. Mm-hmm. You need to get the fuck out of there. And if you're just sitting around nodding your head while this shit is happening, where you're, like, criminalizing speech, criminalizing dissent, you're part of the problem. And if you're doing this all to get your friends in, it's for what? You're participating in the destruction of this community. That's all I'll say. Sorry.
Really good. Yeah. Thank you so much. The only other thing, amazing. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sorry, I'm ending it with laughs. I'm booking it with laughs. I'm booking in this with laughs. Yeah.
The only other thing I need listeners to know is that we're going to be looking at a tall Adnan,
yeah.
Painting. I'll have all the information about it in the underworld. So be sure to look at that every single day for 5 minutes.
Except for I'm out of town next week, so we're not talking about it until the following week.
Okay, so you have two weeks to look at it.
Which one?
We don't remember.
Oh.
Do you love her?
Yeah, I saw her work. I was thinking about, I was trying to be like Danielle, and I was going to have my reading list and all my notes, but I didn't pull them out at all. But I was thinking about her. And I was thinking about, I hadn't really seen the Howard Dina Purnell stuff.
Pindell, yeah.
Pindell, her work is incredible.
Yeah. SF MoMA doesn't have any Howard Dina Pindell, by the way, Kate.
I checked into it.
Yeah.
Maysoon looked into it.
Because I really wanted to see it in person. It's so layered.
Oh, and textured. I was thinking about this. Can I say, I know my time is up.
Might as well
keep going. I was thinking about, I wanted to give shout out to some younger artists. Like, I feel like we always talk about, like, elders and people our age, but I was thinking about, obviously, Helia, Elizabeth Estrada. There's a person I met at Haystack that's effing incredible. Zara, they go to work at Cranbrook. They are Marsh Arab, and their work is, like, it was so incredible. It was, like, really powerful work.
What's her name, Zara what?
I can't remember her last name. Okay. I'll look at her last name, but her work is incredible, too. And I was just thinking about, it's good, like, we always look at older people that are influences, but I'm trying to do a thing of, like, with students, too, like, who are young people that are also, young people much younger than me that are also, like, and who I like, mm-hmm. their spirit, the work they're doing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And just want to celebrate them.
Okay, it is Atal Adnan, Lumiere 2, circa 1960, and it's oil on canvas laid on board, so.
Oh, whoa. I'm having feelings.
What feelings are you having?
It was like transporting me.
To
like,
where?
Can you show me that again?
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, I'm drawn to that pinkish square in the center. Like, my eyes won't let me leave that place. Ooh. So I'm feeling like a little trapped. not trapped in a bad way, but
it's
drawn
like a
in.
Bullseye almost.
Yeah, a bullseye, yeah. Or like the center of a flower, right? Totally. Right, the center part with the leaves. So like I'm being pulled in. It will take me more time to sit with that to figure out where I'm going, but it has my attention.
I'm glad it's one you can dig into.
Okay, so the emotion I'm feeling is curious.
That's a great emotion. You know, I think I feel that a lot and I don't recognize it as like something I'm feeling because it's not, I'm not crying. I'm not like.
It doesn't feel like, I always forget that curiosity is an emotion or can be an emotion, right?
Yeah, I'm like.
Huh. It's either we've got to be like sad, angry, happy, like these like very.
No, I think that's the key to anything is like, I'm curious. Like, where does this come from? How did this. What kind of bomb destroyed this whole village? Why are we, you know what I mean? Why are we supplying the bomb? So I think just like ask, never stop asking questions. Like every moment, even asking myself, like, why did I say that? Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. What is that coming from? Yeah. Am I responding? Is that something inside of me or was that the painting? Or being curious.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It was an absolute honor and a privilege. And we're going to go ahead and say congratulations. And Free Palestine, and from the bridge
to the other bridge
and the island in between.
This really has good.
Okay.
This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.